27. Playing pretend. I will confess my heresy. I do not back down from the things I have said, regardless of what the ardents demand. From Oathbringer, Preface. The sounds of arguing politicians drifted to Shallan's ears as she sketched. She sat on a stone seat at the back of the large meeting room near the top of the tower. She'd brought a pillow to sit on, and Pattern buzzed happily on the little pedestal. She sat with her feet up, thighs supporting her drawing pad, stockinged toes curling over the rim of the bench in front of her. Not the most dignified of positions. Radiant would be mortified. At the front of the auditorium, Dalinar stood before the glowing map that Shallan and he, somehow combining their powers, could create. He'd invited Taravangian, the High Princes, their wives, and their head scribes. Elokar had come with Calami, who was scribing for him lately. Renarin stood beside his father in his Bridge IV uniform, looking uncomfortable, so, basically, same as usual. Adolin lounged nearby, arms folded, occasionally whispering a joke toward one of the men of Bridge IV. Radiant should be down there, engaging in this important discussion about the future of the world. Instead, Shallan drew. The light was just so good up here, with these broad glass windows. She was tired of feeling trapped in the dark hallways of the lower levels, always feeling that something was watching her. She finished her sketch, then tipped it toward Pattern, holding the sketchbook with her sleeved safe hand. He rippled up from his post to inspect her drawing. The slot, obstructed by a mashed-up figure with bulging inhuman eyes. Pattern said. Yes, that is correct. It has to be some kind of spren, right? I feel I should know, Pattern said. This is a thing from long ago. Long ago. Shallan shivered. Why is it here? I cannot say, Pattern replied. It is not a thing of us. It is of him. An ancient spren of odium. Delightful. Shallan flipped the page over the top of her sketchbook and started on another drawing. The others spoke further of their coalition. Thelena and Aesir recurring as the most important countries to convince, now that Eri had made it completely clear they had joined the enemy.
Brightness Calami, Dalinar was saying. The last report, it listed a large gathering of the enemy in Marat, was it?
Yes, Bright Lord, the scribe said from her position at the reading desk. Southern Marat. You hypothesized it was the low population of the region that induced the Voidbringers to gather there.
The Iriali have taken the chance to strike eastward, as they've always wanted to, Dalinar said. They'll seize Rira and Babathornum. Meanwhile, areas like Triax around the southern half of central Roshar continue to go dark.
Brightness Calami nodded, and Shallan tapped her lips with her drawing pencil. The question raised an implication. How could cities go completely dark? These days, major cities, particularly ports, would have hundreds of span reeds in operation. Every light eyes or merchant wanting to watch prices or keep in contact with distant estates would have one. Those in Kolinar had started working as soon as the high storms returned, and then they'd been cut off, one by one. Their last reports claimed that armies were gathering near the city. Then, nothing. The enemy seemed to be able to locate span reeds somehow. At least they'd finally gotten word from Kaladin. A single glyph for time, implying they should be patient. He'd been unable to get to a town to find a woman to scribe for him, and just wanted them to know he was safe. Assuming someone else hadn't gotten the span reed, and faked the glyph to put them off.
The enemy is making a play for the Oath Gates, Dalinar decided. All of their motions, save for the gathering in Marat, indicate this. My instincts say that army is planning to strike back at Azir, or even to cross and try to assault Yakaved. I trust Dalinar's assessment, High Prince Aladar added. If he believes this course to be likely, we should listen.
Bah, said High Prince Ruthar.
The oily man leaned against the wall across from the others, barely paying attention.
Who cares what you say, Aladar? It's amazing you can even see, considering the place you've gone and stuck your head these days.
Aladar spun and thrust his hand to the side in a summoning posture. Dalinar stopped him, as Ruthar must have known that he would. Shallan shook her head, letting herself instead be drawn farther into her sketching. A few creation spren appeared at the top of her drawing pad, one a tiny shoe, the other a pencil like the one she used. Her sketch was of High Prince Sadeas, drawn without a specific memory. She'd never wanted to add him to her collection. She finished the quick sketch, then flipped to a sketch of Brightlord Peril, the other man they'd found dead in the hallways of Urethiru. She'd tried to recreate his face without wounds. She flipped back and forth between the two. They do look similar, Shallan decided. Same bulbous features, similar build. Her next two pages were pictures of the two Horn-Eaters. Those two looked roughly similar as well. And the two murdered women? Why would the man who strangled his wife confess to that murder, but then swear he hadn't killed the second woman? One was already enough to get you executed. That spren is mimicking the violence, she thought. Killing or wounding in the same way as attacks from previous days. A kind of impersonation? Pattern hummed softly, drawing her attention. Shallan looked up to see someone strolling in her direction. A middle-aged woman with short black hair cut almost to the scalp. She wore a long skirt and a buttoning shirt with a vest. Thalen merchant clothing.
What is that you're sketching, Brightness? The woman asked in Vaden.
Hearing her own language so suddenly was strange to Shallan, and her mind took a moment to sort through the words. People, Shallan said, closing her drawing pad. I enjoy figure drawing. You're the one who came with Taravangian, his surge binder.
Malata, she said, though I am not his. I came to him for convenience, as Spark suggested we might look to Urethiru, now that it has been rediscovered.
She surveyed the large auditorium. Shallan could see no sign of her spren.
Do you suppose we really filled this entire chamber?
10 orders, Shallan said, with hundreds of people in most. Yes, I'd assume we could fill it. In fact, I doubt everyone belonging to the orders could fit in here.
And now there are 4 of us, she said idly, eyeing Renarin, who stood stiff beside his father, sweating beneath the scrutiny as people occasionally glanced at him.
5, Shallan said. There's a flying bridgeman out there somewhere, and those are only of the ones of us gathered here. There are bound to be others like you who are still looking for a way to reach us.
If they want to, Malata said. Things don't have to be the way they were. Why should they? It didn't work out so well last time for the Radiance, did it?
Maybe, Shallan said. But maybe this isn't the time to experiment either. The desolation has started again. We could do worse than rely upon the past to survive this.
Curious, the woman said, that we have only the word of a few stuffy Alethi about this entire desolation business. Eh, sister?
Shallan blinked at the casual way it was said, along with a wink. Malata smiled and sauntered back toward the front of the room.
Well, Shallan whispered, she's annoying.
Pattern said. It will be worse when she starts destroying things.
Destroying?
Dustbringer, Pattern said. Her spren, they like to break what is around them. They want to know what is inside.
Pleasant, Shallan said, as she flipped back through her drawings. The thing in the crack, the dead men. This should be enough to present to Dalinar and Adolin, which she planned to do today, now that she had her sketches done. And after that? I need to catch it, she thought. I watch the market. Eventually someone will be hurt. And a few days later, this thing will try to copy that attack. Perhaps she could patrol the unexplored parts of the tower? Look for it, instead of waiting for it to attack? The dark corridors. Each tunnel like a drawing's impossible line. The room had grown quiet. Shallan shook out of her reverie and looked up to see what was happening. ELA Sadius had arrived at the meeting, carried in a palanquin. She was accompanied by a familiar figure. Meridas Amaram was a tall man, tan-eyed, with a square face and solid figure. He was also a murderer, a thief, and a traitor. He'd been caught trying to steal a shard blade, proof that what Captain Kaladin said about him was true. Shallan gritted her teeth, but found her anger cool. Not gone. No, she would not forgive this man for killing Helleran. But the uncomfortable truth was that she didn't know why or how her brother had fallen to Amaram. She could almost hear Yasna whispering to her, "Don't judge without more details." Below, Adolin had risen and stepped toward Amaram, right into the center of the illusory map, breaking its surface, causing waves of glowing stormlight to ripple across it. He stared murder at Amaram, though Dalinar rested his hand on his son's shoulder, holding him back.
"Brightness Sadius," Dalinar said. "I am glad you have agreed to join the meeting. We could use your wisdom in our planning."
"I'm not here for your plans, Dalinar," ELA said. "I'm here because it was a convenient place to find you all together. I've been in conference with my advisors back at our estates, and the consensus is that the heir, my nephew, is too young. This is no time for House Sadius to be without leadership, so I've made a decision."
"Ele," Dalinar said, stepping into the illusion beside his son. "Let's talk about this. Please, I have an idea that, though untraditional, might—"
"Tradition is our ally, Dalinar," ELA said. "I don't think you've ever understood that as you should. High Marshal Amaram is our house's most decorated and well-regarded general. He is beloved of our soldiers and known the world over. I name him regent and heir to the house title. He is, for all intents, High Prince Sadius now. I would ask the king to ratify this."
Shallan's breath caught. King Elokar looked up from his seat, where he, seemingly, had been lost in thought. "Is this legal?"
"Yes," Navani said, arms folded.
"Dalinar," Amaram said, stepping down several of the steps toward the rest of them at the bottom of the auditorium.
His voice gave Shallan chills. That refined diction, that perfect face, that crisp uniform. This man was what every soldier aspired to be. "I'm not the only one who is good at playing pretend," she thought.
"I hope," Amaram continued, "our recent friction will not prevent us from working together for the needs of Alethkar. I have spoken to Brightness ELA, and I think I have persuaded her that our differences are secondary to the greater good of Roshar."
"The greater good," Dalinar said. "You think you are one to speak about what is good?"
"Everything I've done is for the greater good, Dalinar," Amaram said, his voice strained. "Everything. Please, I know you intend to pursue legal action against me. I will stand at trial. But let us postpone that until after Roshar has been saved."
Dalinar regarded Amaram for an extended, tense moment. Then he finally looked to his nephew and nodded in a curt gesture.
"The throne acknowledges your act of regency, Brightness," Elokar said to ELA. "My mother will wish a formal writ, sealed and witnessed.
Already done, ELA said. Dalinar met the eyes of Amaram across the floating map.
High Prince, Dalinar finally said. High Prince, Amaram said back, tipping his head.
Bastard, Adolin said. Dalinar winced visibly, then pointed toward the exit.
Perhaps, son, you should take a moment to yourself.
Yeah, sure. Adolin pulled out of his father's grip, stalking toward the exit. Shallan thought only a moment, then grabbed her shoes and drawing pad and hurried after him. She caught up to Adolin in the hallway outside, near where the palanquins for the women were parked, and took his arm.
Hey, she said softly.
He glanced at her and his expression softened.
You want to talk? Shallan asked. You seem angrier about him than you were before.
No, Adolin muttered. I'm just annoyed.
We're finally rid of Sadeus, and now that takes his place? He shook his head. When I was young, I used to look up to him. I started getting suspicious when I was older, but I guess part of me still wanted him to be like they said. A man above all the pettiness and the politics. A true soldier.
Shallan wasn't certain what she thought of the idea of a true soldier being the type who didn't care about politics. Shouldn't the why of what a man was doing be important to him? Soldiers didn't talk that way. There was some ideal she couldn't quite grasp, a kind of cult of obedience, of caring only about the battlefield and the challenge it presented. They walked onto the lift, and Adolin fished out a free gemstone, a little diamond not surrounded by a sphere, and placed it into a slot along the railing. Stormlight began to drain from the stone, and the balcony shook, then slowly began to descend. Removing the gem would tell the lift to stop at the next floor. A simple lever pushed one way or the other would determine whether the lift crawled upward or downward. They descended past the top tier, and Adolin took up position by the railing, looking out over the central shaft with the window all along one side. They were starting to call it the atrium, though it was an atrium that ran up dozens upon dozens of floors.
Kaladin's not going to like this, Adolin said. Amaram is a high prince. The two of us spent weeks in jail because of the things that man did.
I think Amaram killed my brother.
Adolin wheeled around to stare at her.
What?
Amaram has a shard blade, Shallan said. I saw it previously in the hands of my brother, Helleran. He was older than I am and left Yakheved years ago. From what I can gather, he and Amaram fought at some point, and Amaram killed him, taking the blade.
Shallan. That blade. You know where Amaram got that, right?
On the battlefield?
From Kaladin.
Adolin raised his hand to his head.
The bridge boy insisted that he'd saved Amaram's life by killing a shard bearer. Amaram then killed Kaladin's squad and took the shards for himself. That's basically the entire reason the two hate each other.
Shallan's throat grew tight.
Oh, tuck it away. Don't think about it.
Shallan, Adolin said, stepping toward her. Why would your brother try to kill Amaram? Did he maybe know the High Lord was corrupt? Storms, Kaladin didn't know any of that. Poor bridge boy. Everyone would have been better off if he'd just let Amaram die.
Don't confront it. Don't think about it.
Yeah, she said.
Huh.
But how did your brother know? Adolin said, pacing across the balcony. Did he say anything?
We didn't talk much, Shallan said, numb. He left when I was young. I didn't know him well.
Anything to get off this topic. For this was something she could still tuck away in the back of her brain. She did not want to think about Kaladin and Helleran. It was a long, quiet ride to the bottom floors of the tower.
Adolin wanted to go visit his father's horse again, but she wasn't interested in standing around smelling horse dung. She got off on the second level to make her way toward her rooms.
Secrets. There are more important things in this world, Helleran had said to her father. More important even than you and your crimes. Moraes knew something about this. He was withholding the secrets from her like sweets to entice a child to obedience. But all he wanted her to do was investigate the oddities in Urethiru. That was a good thing, wasn't it? She'd have done it anyway.
Shallan meandered through the hallways, following a path where Sabariel's workers had affixed some sphere lanterns to hooks on the walls. Locked up and filled with only the cheapest diamond spheres, they shouldn't be worth the effort to break into, but the light they gave was also rather dim. She should have stayed above. Her absence must have destroyed the illusion of the map. She felt bad about that. Was there a way she could learn to leave her illusions behind her? They'd need Stormlight to keep going. In any case, Shallan had needed to leave the meeting. The secrets this city hid were too engaging to ignore. She stopped in the hallway and dug out her sketchbook, flipping through pages, looking at the faces of the dead men. Absently turning a page, she came across a sketch she didn't recall making. A series of twisting, maddening lines, scribbled and unconnected. She felt cold. When did I draw this? Pattern moved up her dress, stopping under her neck. He hummed, an uncomfortable sound.
I do not remember.
She flipped to the next page. Here she'd drawn a rush of lines sweeping out from a central point, confused and chaotic, transforming to the heads of horses with the flesh ripping off, their eyes wide, equine mouths screaming. It was grotesque, nauseating. Oh, Stormfather! Her fingers trembled as she turned to the next page. She'd scribbled it entirely black, using a circular motion, spiraling toward the center point. A deep void, an endless corridor, something terrible and unknowable at the end. She snapped the sketchbook shut. What is happening to me? Pattern hummed in confusion.
Do we run?
Where?
Away. Out of this place.
No. She trembled, part of her terrified, but she couldn't abandon those secrets. She had to have them, hold them, make them hers. She turned sharply in the corridor, taking a path away from her room. A short time later, she strode into the barracks, where Sabariel housed his soldiers. There were plentiful spaces like this in the tower. Vast networks of rooms with built-in stone bunks in the walls. Urethiru had been a military base. That much was evident from its ability to efficiently house tens of thousands of soldiers on the lower levels alone. In the common room of the barracks, men lounged with coats off, playing with cards or knives. Her passing caused a stir as men gaped, then leaped to their feet, debating between buttoning their coats and saluting. Whispers of radiant chased her as she walked into a corridor lined with rooms where the individual platoons bunked. She counted off doorways marked by archaic Alethi numbers etched into the stone, then entered a specific one. She burst in on Vatha and his team, who sat inside playing cards by the light of a few spheres. Poor Gaz sat on the chamber pot in a corner privy, and he yelped, pulling closed the cloth on the doorway. Guess I should have anticipated that, Shallan thought, covering her blush by sucking in a burst of stormlight. She folded her arms and regarded the others as they, lazily, climbed to their feet and saluted. They were only 12 men now. Some had made their way to other jobs. A few others had died in the Battle of Narok. She'd kind of been hoping that they would all drift away, if only so she wouldn't have to figure out what to do with them. She now realized that Adolin was right. That was a terrible attitude. These men were a resource, and all things considered,
had been remarkably loyal.
"I," Shallan told them, "have been an awful employer."
"Don't know about that brightness,"
Red said. She still didn't know how the tall, bearded man had gotten his nickname.
"The pay has come on time and you haven't gotten too many of us killed." "I got killed,"
Shob said from his bunk, where he saluted, still lying down.
"Shut up, Shob," Vatha said. "You're not dead." "I'm dying this time, Sarge. I'm sure of it." "Then at least you'll be quiet," Vatha said. "Brightness, I agree with Red. You've done right by us."
"Yes, well, the free ride is over," Shallan said. "I have work for you."
Vatha shrugged, but some of the others looked disappointed.
Maybe Adolin was right. Maybe deep down men like this did need something to do. They wouldn't have admitted that fact, though.
"I'm afraid it might be dangerous," Shallan said, then smiled. "And it will probably involve you getting a little drunk."